Welcome to the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast, taking you around the country, shedding light on the work of the Scottish FA from grassroots to coach development, and taking a look at the future of our game.
Former Scotland and Celtic captain Stephen McManus is the latest guest on the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast. He joins Lewis Irons and Greg Patterson to discuss his coaching journey.
Back for another edition of the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast with myself, Lewis Irons, and Greg Patterson, as always. And today I'm thrilled to say we're joined by former Scotland captain, former Celtic captain. We could go on and on about the accolades, Stephen McManus. Mick, it's a pleasure to have you, and thanks for joining us.
No, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to a chat other than my wife and two kids. So it's nice to see some familiar faces.
Absolutely, it is. Greg, I've given him a brief introduction there, but it's to have someone like Steve McManus on the podcast to talk through, you know, and particularly at the moment with football not being on, like he's just mentioned, it's great to really get into this and pick the brains of someone like Steve.
I think, as of course, it's great to have Stephen, but I think it's good to have him in particular because, you know, we talk about my coaching journey, and that's something I think, or I know, that Stephen's taken seriously, and he's always, you know, he's always dropping a wee text or a wee WhatsApp to me to see what he can continue to do to, I suppose, make himself better. So, despite that magnificent playing background that you alluded to, Lewis, it's good to talk to somebody about, to, you know, the likes of Stephen about that coaching journey as well.
It certainly is. Mick, I guess before we get into it then, it's good to always see how you're doing personally, and obviously amid what is quite challenging times for everybody, particularly in football, but most importantly, you know, as society as a whole. How are you finding it? Are you doing okay?
Yeah, listen, everybody's family are all keeping safe and well, which is the most important thing at this stage. Obviously, everybody's missing football, everybody's missing normality, but the most important thing is everybody keeping healthy, and certainly in our household, the family are all keeping well as well. So, and you're just kind of trying to stay active. I've started running again, which has been good to try and keep fit and maintain that kind of level of just sanity, basically, that you're enjoying a bit of time yourself. And I think for me, I've always been an early riser, so I like to get up early and it starts your day in the right way. So, and it's for me, it's about routine. I've always had routine in my life, and that's for me, that's the best way to do it.
There's something that we've spoke about before, Greg, that routine, and it's becoming a bit more prominent the more we're doing these podcasts, particularly in this format when we're in isolation like this. Routine is crucial, and it's certainly in terms of, you know, your line of work as well. It's good to keep that in place even though you are stuck at home a lot.
I think you're right. I think it is crucial, and it's interesting that we talk to so many ex-pros, isn't it, ex-professional players, and I think they're used to routine. You know, they're used to being at, you know, at the training ground at 9:30 and games at 3:00 on a Saturday or whenever the games may have kicked off, you know, so they've always had routine in their life, and when that leaves and when that disappears, it can be a tough thing for some people to adapt. But you're right, in my line of work as well, you know, the routine of, you know, working towards probably courses at evenings and weekends has left us, but, you know, we're able to do stuff maybe during the day a little bit now, a little bit more. So yeah, it's I think a lot of people have adapted very quickly. And as Stephen says there, you know, they've found other things to fill voids. And, you know, you see the amount of people, you know, challenging each other to 5K runs and 10K runs and to beat this time and that time and 100 keepy-ups in the back garden. But it's to generate, I think, all that, the heart of it, Lewis, is to generate that routine, as you suggest.
Yeah, I've seen you take part in some things like that, Mick, with the keepy-ups and all. I wouldn't even dare try and compete with you with any of that, the running or anything like that. But that has helped, hasn't it, to see people engaging like that.
A lot of these things, they're all for good causes as well, which is the most important thing. If we can show our appreciation to the guys on the front line, it's exactly what you'll try and do. So, like I say, there's people that are in extremely challenging positions in an hourly basis just now. So it's any challenges that I've took part in, I'm not the liveliest on social media, it's fair to say, but it's never been my style. But for good causes, you always try and participate.
Yeah, absolutely. Bang on. I guess it's when we start these, Mick, I like to always kind of go back to the earliest football memories that the guys have. And with you in particular, growing up, obviously before you then did obviously start with Celtic, just as a young kid, what were your earliest memories of football and your hopes and dreams of becoming a professional?
It's funny, Lewis, I kind of spoke about this at great length when I was in the staff at Motherwell in the academy as well with Stephen Hamill and David Clarkson when we were chatting about this, and a big part of my early life was obviously playing with your school, and I loved playing with the school in primary. I played with the school team at a very, very early age, I think maybe primary four at that time, and it was a school janitor that picked the team. But it was because you were playing with your friends. Very rarely do you get to play with your friends. If you're with your boys club and whatnot, because it's people that are usually out with the area, but with your primary school, it was. So that was a big part of me growing up, because I was able to play with my friends, you were enjoying it. So that was a certainly, when I look back in my early days of football, it's a big positive for me, and that took me, believe it or not, Brian Ewan was one that actually, I worked with Brian when I was nine. Brian was part of Hibs back then, and there was a kind of school of excellence, if you like, through in the West, and we were involved in that, along with Martin Ferguson, who was Alex Ferguson's brother. So I had a lot of really, really positive kind of early exposure to professional setup, which then was brilliant, but everything was based around technique and fun, and it's something that I've always kind of tried to make sure that you kind of continue throughout your coaching career.
Yeah, that's already, we're starting on quite interesting topics there, Greg, aren't we, when Mick's talking about that, remembering at an early age, and he's already thinking about incorporating that in now in the coaching capacity. And it is true, at the root of it all, it does come back to that in many ways.
Of course it does, and it comes back to those positive experiences and positive memories. So, and you know, and Stephen's, you know, taking himself back to that, as he says, that technique and fun, that was probably the two most important facets for him. So if he then adopts that in his training sessions, then it's a good place to start, I suppose, isn't it? For any training session, if you're going to develop technique and you're going to enjoy it, then brilliant. So absolutely, it's a good place to start. And you know, it's interesting he chats about that time when, you know, back playing with your friends and stuff like that as well, and such a crucial time for a young player.
Yeah. What were your kind of earliest memories about making that transition and joining Celtic? Stephen, of course, you know, playing for your school is one thing, but then when you make that step, a hunger and desire, what was the kind of core there?
Back then, Lewis, it was completely different. You played with your boys' club, you played with your school, you played with your districts. There were always scouts kind of contacting your kind of parents. And again, probably the biggest influence that I've ever had in my career is probably not going to be a coach. It's probably my dad that was the biggest influence, and certainly in my career, and even to this day, I'm very fortunate that both parents are still here, and they've seen you kind of seen your full career. But everything, you're almost your hero if you weren't growing up was your dad, and I'm not any different from anybody else. So that was, if it wasn't for him, I'd never have been on the pathway that I was able to kind of have. And again, it's going back to the enjoyment factor. You would be at the back playing, you'd be at the front playing, you would wait till he came in from work, and the first thing that you were wanting to do was go out and play, and you were always having a ball at your feet. And as Greg touched on here, I'm a big believer in, if you want to excel in anything, you must be obsessed by it, you must enjoy it, you must love everything that you do. And that was the beginning of my football journey. It's the only thing that I'd ever known, and I've still got the same hunger and love for the game as what I did when I was a child.
It's true, isn't it, that when we speak about this, Greg, the parents, the commitment, sometimes, you know, the sacrifices parents make, and there's no coincidence here that a lot of people we've spoken to in the podcast talk about the influence of the parents at a young age because of that commitment they do give and build that foundation, if you like.
And it is a huge commitment. And it's funny, I'm kind of reliving my life again because, you know, I've got my oldest boy, he's seven, and my youngest boy's five. So I'm volunteering again back in their grassroots club. It's only now, you know, having been through that whole cycle myself, kind of playing and then, you know, relying on my parents, and now being in that, you know, and then educating people to maybe become the coach, and then now back into that. Gee whiz, you know what? I'm the kind of parent now, and I'm the helper. And it's just, you're right, it is. It keeps them so, so busy. And you see umpteen parents standing on this. Because sometimes, you know, it's all very well, I'm going to drop them off at football, but dropping them off at football, by the time you get back home, you can't, you know, you must be there. You're as well staying at the games hall or the side of the pitch or whatever it is. So you're right, it's a huge commitment, and it's no wonder that Stephen, you know, alludes back to that, you know, his dad being that huge influence on his early career, and even now, as he says, so lucky still to have him here and pick his brains about things.
I think as well, Greg, when you look back at instances like this as well, and it's the influences it's such a big help when they're positive. Even my boys' club coaches, they have very good knowledge on the game. You know, you you hear a lot of horror stories over the years of people that are involved and maybe don't understand the game of football at a young, and it's all about winning, and it's all about how many touches the one player can get, and the game's changed, and it's such a big, massive advantage to young players nowadays that the coaches are now getting educated in the right way, which I think it can only benefit our game for the long term.
Yeah. Yes, Mick, well, you have seen quite a transition then in terms of the coaches, you know, when you were first playing at a young age to the sort of modern coach that a lot of people talk about now. Have you seen a lot of difference, a lot of change?
You can see a lot of it's, I think society's obviously changed and the coaches and it's any walk of life. You need to evolve with the game. But I do think the principles should remain the same when you're coaching young players, is that you must let them have a freedom, you must let them enjoy themselves, because if you don't, the game's the best teacher, I think, especially at that age. You let them go and play, you let them spend as much contact with the football as they possibly can, and make sure that they play with a smile on their face, because if young kids don't enjoy something, it's very difficult to get them to come back in numerous times.
Yeah, that's true. And that's something that we've spoken about a lot, Craig. But just when we look at you, obviously making that transition into professional football, yep. Mick, of course, you come through the ranks at Celtic. You'll have worked under a lot of different coaches, I'm sure, and I'll experience a lot from that spell. But then when you make that transition in 2003 and you get your debut under Martin O'Neill, yep. What was that experience like?
At that time, Celtic, our first team was very, very strong. You know, it was probably as good a Celtic team as I had ever seen, and you had, like I say, I left school in 1998. My last exam was the day Scotland played Brazil, so you had to kind of wait.
That story there, Stephen, you break my heart telling this story. I remember, sorry for butting in, but I remember Stephen and I were sitting together. We were over in the pro license student exchange, Lewis, and we're sitting having lunch, looking over Lake Geneva, a very lovely setting. And Stephen says to me, you know, he says, see, the day I left school was the day Scotland played in the last World Cup. And I've been through a whole career and I've still not seen Scotland at a World Cup. And I thought, for God's sake, what a story to spoil a moment.
And see if you speak to any player of our generation, you know, it's the biggest regret that you've never been able to be involved in a major tournament. And again, everything, you're just hoping that Our country deserves to be at major tournaments, you know, and that's, for me, that should be the end game for everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
And just going back to, obviously, Mick, we were talking there, when you make that debut, and of course, those memories when you leave school and you see that, I'm sure that desire, seeing Scotland on that stage, that must have played a big part in fueling your career that followed. Obviously, your experience in the international setup as well followed, but at that age, were you looking at it and thinking, this is everything you want? And then 5 years later, of course, you get that first team experience with Celtic.
It was, you know, and it was certainly when you, I always felt that when you, because I was late on, I was 21 when I made my debut. I think I played next to John Kennedy that day as well. John made his debut at 16. Sean was obviously kind of my age group as well. So Sean had made his debut at 17. So I felt when you had to kind of make your debut late on, you almost appreciated it that wee bit more. And that was how I approached my playing career, was that I was sitting watching the Michael Jordan Netflix documentary earlier, and every training session was like his last, and that was something that was ingrained from us at a young age, again working with some very good coaches when we were younger. Willie McStay, Ken McDowell, Chris McCart, Tam O'Neill, that was ingrained with us at a very, very early age, that you couldn't waste a moment. And it's, when you hear a lot of coaches and you do a lot of research, they say the same thing. So if everybody's saying the same message, then there's a reason for it. It's because it's the right message.
Definitely. I guess under Martin O'Neill, the man that gave you your debut, what sort of manager was he? What was he like as a young player developing and learning? And then obviously when you get that opportunity, how did he kind of handle things with you?
So Martin was terrific. Martin was a manager. It was probably my first ever experience of a manager. Because you had always worked, when you look back, it was almost coaches that you had worked under. Yeah. But probably the kind of defining moment in my career was working with Kenny McDowell in the reserve level, because Kenny was perfect to bridge that gap between reserve level and first team level, where he was so demanding, he was so intense, he prepared you for that step, which he was absolutely terrific for all of us at that stage, because there was, you knew how hard it was going to be, but you knew the sacrifices that you had to make, and if you didn't make the sacrifices, then you wouldn't then be prepared for when you need to step up, because Martin was ruthless, but he was a manager, and he allowed, but he also allowed his coaches to coach. So Steve Walford would take a lot of training at the time, and it's now when you come out the other end that you can see the differences between somebody who wants and thrives on being a manager and manages the full football club. And he allowed his coach, he gave the responsibility to Steve Walford to coach and to take training.
That's a really good point to bring up, Greg, isn't it? That connection between first team, youth teams, and that, how it all intertwines and links, and how important having a strong link there is. That's something that we've probably not spoke about all that much.
Probably not, and it's important that you're right. It's that how they bridge the gap as well between, you know, some clubs, you know, can be criticised at times for the being too disparate between, you know, the youth structures and the first team or even the reserves. So you're right. It's to build those appropriate links and listen to Stephen there. It's maybe something that Martin O'Neill made an absolute necessity, I suppose, to allow boys like John Kennedy and Sean Maloney and Stephen himself to, you know, to, as I said, bridge that gap in between first team reserves and then ultimately the first team.
Yeah, one man that I want to hear a lot about from you, Mick, just because of the amount that you've worked with him through your career, was obviously Gordon Strachan, who, yeah, I think it's probably safe to say you fully established yourself when under his reign. Did he play a big part in your career, do you think?
He did. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And Gordon, when I touched on it a little bit, Martin and what Martin's style was, and he was a manager and he was a terrific, terrific manager. But Gordon was a manager who coached, and he coached every day. Gordon took training every day, was very hands-on. But I think probably the fit was very good, because a lot of us were young players and Gordon really enjoyed working with us. But he actually, we'd done a lot of tactical stuff. You learned different, you worked in different units. And he almost re-educated you all on the game and how he saw it, which was great. But again, when I look back at all the managers that you've worked under, the one thing that they did do, and they did it very, very well, was whatever message they were sending out, they broke it down to its simplest form so that all players understood exactly what you were looking for. So Gordon was probably the first one that I worked off that was almost like a kind of light bulb moment, where there was clarity and there was precise, a precise message, and I think clarity in coaching is king.
Greg, it's great hearing about all that without even really touching on all the incredible achievements that, you know, Celtic had under Gordon Strachan and Mick was a part of, you know, league titles, Scottish Cups, Scottish League Cups, you know, it's, the list is endless, but when you hear the details about it, I guess it's no coincidence when you hear the work that goes in from a manager like Gordon.
No, absolutely not. Those things aren't a coincidence. You know, you don't get to lift the trophies at the end of the season if those details aren't there, because then you're not leaving anything to chance. And you and I have spoke, you know, we've been fortunate enough to speak to a lot of people recently, and that's probably the one thing for me that keeps coming out, is that detail, that attention to detail that the coaches will put in place to ensure that, you know, and I get a lot of it from ex-players when they come on coaching courses. Gee whiz, I didn't realise there was this amount of work involved in being a coach. You know, and you can sit and analyse, you know, and Stephen will know this, you know, putting together a 10, 15 minute presentation, match analysis presentation to take back to the players. How long's that taken? 8-9 hours, sometimes more. Oh, let's watch that bit again. Let's rewind that. You know, so the attention to detail and the work that goes into that, as Stephen says, to give that absolute clarity and precision in the message is, as you say, critical.
Yeah, Stephen, I talked there about, you know, the things that you won with Celtic, of course, but one thing I also want to talk about is obviously, you know, competing in Champions Leagues, for example. Obviously, everyone knows about that famous result against Milan, and God, that'll live with you forever, I'm sure, yeah, scoring and beating a team like that. But the work that Gordon put into, obviously, competing against the world's elite, how kind of precise was he with it all? What was his approach to it?
It was, like I say, Greg touched on it, the attention to detail was remarkable, but it was so simple as well. He never complicated anything. But Gordon's, he used to say it all the time to us as players, he's, Gordon's job, he looked at his sole job was to make every single day 1% of everyone else to be better. If we could be a better player tomorrow than what we were today, the manager at the time, that was his job. And like I said, he's, Gordon was on the pitch every single day. I don't think I ever took part in a session where Gordon wasn't on the pitch. And when you've got somebody that leads that way, inspires people, and certainly that was when my kind of coaching journey, I felt, really, really started to take off, because you started to analyse different things, whether it was mannerisms from certain people, no matter how difficult a morning or a night or a day the manager might have had, how was he coming in to address his players first thing in the morning? Was he positive? Was he even a bit down? And Gordon, no matter the result, he was always positive. And that gave a real positivity in creating that culture within the training ground, which I think is very important.
Shouldn't you talk about Gordon there, Stephen? You and I were fortunate enough to obviously see him when you were going through the pro licence, and given that kind of lapse in time between when you had played for him and then when you saw him present, maybe, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years later in the pro licence, was there any signs there that Gordon had maybe evolved some of his practices, or were they good enough to stand the test of time anyway?
I think we're good enough to stand the task of time. Greg, you could see that he had evolved. He was a lot more mellow. That was the first thing. Mm. He had relaxed a lot more, whether that was because he was out the kind of pressure cooker of club football. Mm. Maybe it was because he still had the same hunger, he still had the same drive and intensity to football, and he still had the same love of football. And again, getting back to the point I said earlier about, he still had the exact same drive to make players better. And that was his big, big thing.
Was. It's interesting when you talk about that, you know, is there a moment in your career when, you know, you were thinking, have you always been from even a young age thinking and operating in that sort of mindset where you're thinking about coaching, you're thinking about the tactics of the game, or was there maybe a light bulb moment that you went, oh, coaching and a future in that sort of part of the game is for you?
I think it's certainly when I look back in the kind of playing career, every kind of year you felt you were getting that wee bit more mature, that wee bit more experienced. I started my coaching badges when I was maybe 25 at the time. Yeah. So it was quite young, but I really enjoyed that side of the game. I seemed to communicate quite well when I was a player, and I've tried to take that onto the coaching side of the game. And like I said, I always felt it was the natural progression. But the coaching courses that I went on with the SFA, the A licence was, I would probably say going on the A licence was a defining moment, certainly for myself, which I'll touch on with that as well. But because before that, you always thought there was a bit of, as Greg touched on, you always thought there was a bit of planning and stuff going into coaching sessions and training. But it's not until you actually get down and you walk down and you see all those in front of you, you're holding bibs and balls and markers, and you can just see a big green pitch, and it's your sole responsibility to make this session work. And that was probably the definitive moment where I thought, wow, there's a lot of planning and preparation that goes into every single day at a football club.
I don't think people appreciate that, Greg, to be honest. I don't think people understand the gravity of the responsibility. And like Mick says, even just simply walking out and looking at that pitch and knowing the responsibility on your shoulders, I don't think a lot of people appreciate the amount that is on a coach or a manager on everyday life, not just on a Saturday or...
You could even simplify that right way back to the grassroots game. You know, Mick's talking about the professional game, obviously, but you could take it right back. You know, the majority of good grassroots coaches will have those areas set up, balls all laid out, bibs all laid out, goals in the right position, so that a session flows from that very first minute when the kids arrive right to the 59th, 60th minute, you know, when they disappear back to their parents again. And that takes a lot of preparation and a lot of work. And it's interesting, and I hope he maybe doesn't mind me saying, but even simple things like, you know, as Stephen's maybe mentioned, like even delivering to a group, just the way you speak to a group. I remember Scott Brown, as I say, I hope he doesn't mind me saying, but Scott last year on the A-licence came to me and said, gee, I couldn't do what you're doing. I said, what have I done? I've just spoke to a group. He says, I don't know how to do that yet. You know, so there's all those, it's not just the coaching practice itself. There's the, you know, the thing to players in the dressing room. How do you set that up? How do you have the best environment in the changing room? How do you have the best environment out on the pitch? You know, that we were talking about a lecture theatre, so your match analysis meetings, how do you set them up? There's just so much, as you say, Lewis, to consider that bring together that good coach.
Not just as a player, Stephen, but obviously as a person, you know, you touched on the communication side of it all, and how I think a lot of people would certainly consider you as that big leadership strength of you when they think about you as a player. when that day comes that you get given the armband at Celtic after Lennon left, what was that like for you? Was that a sign of almost like a reward and this is an achievement, or was it a daunting prospect? What was it kind of like?
It was something that, as a young kid, you grew up supporting Celtic, your family grew up supporting Celtic. It was an incredible moment, but again, your first focus on back then was when you become the captain of the club is, I need to make sure we win something. You need to make sure that you're a captain who wins things. And touching back to your routine, that was what it was. It was whatever happens, it's the next day is the most important. Can you be better than what you were the day before? And I always tried to have that kind of mindset and mentality of, it was an unbelievably proud moment, absolutely no doubt about it. But I just wanted to make sure that I was getting to work the next day to be the best I could possibly be.
Yeah. And then, of course, the moment does come. It sounds like we're very much just flying through your career, but the moment does come when you left Celtic for Middlesbrough, again, working under Gordon there. Yep. But did you see that as a big opportunity in terms of experiencing a different type of game down in England and maybe perhaps broadening the horizons a little bit?
Absolutely. You know, I had only ever known Celtic. Like I say, I went to Celtic when I was 14, maybe. And that was me all the way through. I think I left in 2010. But at that time, it was a difficult period under Tony Mowbray. The club wasn't going in the direction that we were used to and that we'd hoped. But also because at the manager at the time, Tony Mowbray didn't fancy me as much as a player as what previous managers did. So I had the opportunity to go and play, and I always wanted to play throughout my career. I wanted to record, like going back to earlier about making your debut at 21. You want to make sure what every team that you go to, you're playing, and you're playing every single week. I was never the type that was comfortable sitting on the bench. It was the first time in my career that I wasn't playing week in, week out under Tony, which was frustrating because you were the captain of the club. And it was just the right time to move on. And it was a brilliant club to go and play for.
There's that drive that we've spoke about a few times, Greg. You know, Stephen's talking about it there, that hunger and desire, not being satisfied with just getting by in a certain capacity or being on a bench. Stephen obviously always had that drive in his career to be playing regularly and doing his best for his club.
As most players do. And it's interesting thinking about these current times and, you know, speak to a lot of the guys that are working in youth academies and, you know, at our clubs. You know, a lot of them are talking about this kind of rage to master. You know, and you can tell, even although there's no games, there are players trying to make themselves better every day by working on their technical proficiencies in the back garden or down at the local park. Yes, we're in isolation, but, you know, it'd be easy just now just to kick back and say, well, I can't play football. But as you say, it's that drive and determination, you know, to go out, manage to do 100 keepy-ups in the back garden yesterday. I'll do 101 today, I'll do 101 tomorrow. You know, I managed to hit that bottle off the top of the wheelie bin three times yesterday. I'll do it four times a day. And just having that rage to master, I suppose, is a good summation of it, to ensure that you get better and better and get, you know, fulfil that potential, I suppose.
Yeah. One thing that we've not really spoke about much in this podcast, Mick, is from a player's perspective, I guess one of the things that a lot of coaches are going to experience and managers are going to experience just part of the game is when managers lose their job. And, of course, at Middlesbrough, you know, you go under Gordon and then Gordon leaves, and then, you know, the experience of that is a huge challenge, I'm sure, for coaches. But as a player's perspective, what can that really do to a club?
I think it can. Nobody likes uncertainty. You can see with the circumstances that we've got just now. But again, and I speak to this a lot about to our young players at the club, and it's the young players need to be resilient, because at some point in your career as a player, as a coach, as a manager, you're going to be out of job. You're going to be the manager who might really like you or lose his job, and how do you cope? How do you react? So you need to be resilient. The only thing that football guarantees you is at some point along the line, you're going to hit a dent to your confidence or your ego or whatever it may be, and it's how you then bounce back from that and how resilient can you be. So I felt, all even growing up at that point, you had a lot of knocks because there was other people that were in the first team and you weren't, and you had to work that wee bit harder. So things like that can certainly help you. At that point when Tony came in, like you say, you just left the club in the January, Tony. But I had a very good relationship with Tony. He was a really, really good man, good manager, very good manager at Celtic. It was probably the wrong time for him. He came in. But in Middlesbrough, he was a lot more comfortable in his environment. He just never fancied me as a player the way that he liked other people, which was absolutely fine. But he always treated me with nothing but respect, and I've certainly got a lot of time for him now, and a very, very good manager.
That's one thing that we've touched on before, Mike, that I think would be great to hear from you about, is just how important, obviously, relationships are in football. I think you're someone that certainly carries yourself where you treat everyone around you with respect, and what that can do for you in the game, because ultimately having strong relationships is a big part of the game that probably people don't realise.
It's funny, listen, I remember speaking to Greg about this in the pro licensing before, when I started coaching, it was actually at Middlesbrough that I started coaching, which again, you weren't playing, my wife and kids were, they came back up the road at the time, and I think I was 28, 29 at the time, where I was going back to an apartment, I was there myself, I didn't want to watch box sets, so I knew, because I had been on the A licence, that I knew I wanted to go into coaching as soon as I finished playing. So I went in and I worked with under-16s at Middlesbrough with a coach called Paul Jenkins, who was terrific. And that was when I probably started starting to think about my future as a coach. And again, if Tony Mowbray had any objections to it, I would have been lost, but he gave me the open book and he said, look, on you go and learn as much as you possibly can, and if you need any help, then so be it. So that was, I'll always be really thankful to Tony Mowbray for that, because he could have took you in the length and breadth of the country and no stripped you at some stage, and always said, like, I would be ready when I had to play, but the coaching side then was something that I knew that I was wanting to get, kind of start sinking my teeth into.
Yeah, and I guess those early kind of experiences you touched on, you know, the licences that you've done, as soon as you are getting, you know, properly and thinking about the coaching side of the game, Mick, is there something in you that is like a hunger that you experienced earlier as a player, that you almost have a resurgence of that when you're going into coaching a little bit?
It was, like, again, Greg touched on in there about Scott Brown, and I remember going on my licence at the time, and it was down at Largs at the time, and the first day that we had been down, and it was raining, and it was, and at that point we were in the classroom, and I had went in, and the first day I really, really struggled. I was so out of my depth, it was incredible. And again, Greg touched on it there, you used to be in total control, you're comfortable in your environment, you're then going to speak and you're the one that's actually standing in front of people that aren't, you don't really know. Some of them are junior coaches, some of them have been managers, but they're no players, they're coaches. And I really, really struggled. And I went up to Parky and Jim Fleeting after the first day, and I said, Parky, I'm not ready for this. I'm not coming back tomorrow. That's enough. That's enough for me. Wow. After the first day, and I remember thinking, no, I'm nowhere ready for this. And Parky, to be fair to him, says to me, he says, Mick, I'll see you 8:15 tomorrow morning. And it was the best bit of advice, because it was the A-licence was terrific. It was brilliant. I loved it. And the best part about it, it was that you can network with people that you're never going to speak with, that you've never spoke with before. There was coaches for New Zealand, there was driving instructors that coached a junior team, and I'm asking him questions about football, and he's looking at me as if to say, what are you doing asking me? And I'm saying, but you've coached for so many years. And it was brilliant, the fact that you were able to spend time and chew people's ear off about different aspects of coaching, because playing and coaching is two completely different things. And I think if you've got that, I try to go on the A-licence with just the way I am. I try to show humility. I try to show respect to people. And I was able then to get as much information from people from different parts of the game. And it was brilliant. And it was probably, when I look back, it was the best 9 days that I can remember. It was absolutely brilliant. And it was like doing a pre-season, mind you, because I joined in every session. But it was absolutely terrific. And that was the moment, certainly for me, after the A-licence, that I knew that was what I wanted to do when I stopped playing.
That's
interesting, Lewis. I always often use the analogy of a ladder. You know, when, you know, Stephen talks about that journey from playing into coaching, and I use a kind of you reach the top of that ladder as a player. And, you know, Stephen spoke about it very well. You know, the conversation with Parky, that's it, I'm done, I'm not coming back. But maybe it's just that realisation that, you know what, I need to start at the bottom of this coaching ladder and start working my way back up that. You know, okay, former players or current players, as Stephen would have been at the time, maybe get to the second or the third run of that ladder, but that's all. They've still got to lean on those people that have got greater coaching experience that help them then get up to the top of the ladder. So it's a, there can be a little bit of a reality check there and a little bit of a wobble, but that's, I suppose, to use Stephen's own words, that's that resilience that he spoke about that was so important, you know, and that's, you know, being resilient enough that he did come back that second day into the Lexington.
Yeah, exactly. It's fascinating to hear that, actually, Mick. It's a great story. And of course, the playing career continues. It goes, you know, strong and strong. And you, I spell at Bristol under McInnes and then O'Driscoll after that, wasn't it? And
yeah.
What was that experience like at Bristol under those two?
It was different. It was I really enjoyed working under Derek and Tony Docherty. Again, it was coaches that you knew, they knew you, so it was an easy transition. And again, getting back to the point earlier, but I've been really, really lucky in working with the managers that I've worked under, and they all had the different styles, but the one thing they all did is they broke everything down to its simplest form, and that was a big, big learning tool, certainly for myself, that I probably took into my own coaching career, is you need to be specific, have clarity, be precise, and make sure that the players can understand what the coach is asking for.
Yeah, and I think did you come across Jody Morris at that point as well as a player?
Jody was a player at that point at Bristol. Great lad, real good type. Him and Stephen Pearson were very tight at that time. Richard Forster was there, but it was a real good group of players. I was only there for a short period, and then obviously Derek lost his job. Sean O'Driscoll came in, I then went back to Middlesbrough, and again my wife and kids were back up the road, so that was a period again where you could sink your teeth right into the coaching side again with Middlesbrough's under-16s, and it was great.
I guess then when the opportunity arose to come back up here and with Motherwell, was that ever something that was ever a doubt for you, the opportunity to come back up to Scotland and be nearer the family, but also at a club like Motherwell who under Stuart McCall you went on to do extremely well?
It was a moment I'll never forget it, Lewis. I had went on holiday to Florida with my wife and kids at the time. I was undecided at what I was going to do, where I was, because I was 30, 31 at the time, and I had a couple of options to stay down south, to go abroad, and my mobile went when I was on holiday, and it was my agent just to say, Stuart McCall's going to give you a call, and within 5 seconds, Stuart McCall phoned me and said, Stephen, I've heard you in Florida, I'm in Florida, do you want to go for a coffee? And he came and picked me up, and I says to my wife, look, I'm going to go and meet Stuart McCall. My wife's never been a great knowledge of football, and she asked who Stuart McCall was, and I said, look, it's a Motherwell manager, and I could see her eyes kind of start to light up a bit because my eldest daughter was going to start school. And I says, look, we're back in 30 minutes, and I ended up sitting with him in a Perkins for about 3.5 hours. and the minute I left, I knew that I was going to end up signing for Motherwell. Just with he was such a brilliant guy, It's a special club, you know. I've grew up a massive Celtic fan. That was always going to be my first club, but it's certainly the Motherwell is always the next one that I'll look for. Brilliant people, brilliant club, and again, you're seeing how to maximise the resources that smaller clubs have got. And at Motherwell, what we try to do is every manager that I had worked under, they try to maximise every single aspect of finance that they've got, and they do it very well. It's a real people's club and a real togetherness within the staff, and I thoroughly enjoyed my I wanted to come back and wanted to make an impact. I says to Stuart, and when I met him, I says, look, I don't want to come back and play for 10 games and then I'm out for injured for 20 games and then come back for, I wanted to make sure I came and trained every minute and played as much as I possibly can, and hopefully I did that.
Yeah, he certainly did, making about 135 appearances for Motherwell or something like that. Incredible, really. And that's a really good note that Stephen's touching on there, Greg, about maximising resource. And I guess when we hear about Stephen's career, you know, from the clubs and the managers he's played for, we are starting to get a really rounded picture about all sorts of different types of experiences that will stand him in a great stead when the coaching eventually did come as it did.
Of course, and you know, just that quick phrase, maximising resources, is a great way of putting it. That, you know, it's, you know, for a message there for young coaches that will say, oh, I don't have this and I don't have that, or I'm only working with a junior team and we've no money and we've no budget. But you can maximise the resources and you can think a little bit, I suppose, you can be a little bit innovative, you know, and maybe, you know, I always use the kind of example of maybe chapping the local college or the local university door and seeing if there's, you know, if there's somebody there going through a sports science degree that might be able to come in and help or something like that. There's always ways and means, and sometimes, I suppose, another phrase, necessity is that mother of invention, that helps the coaches. It helps the coaches flourish. And sometimes when you have all the resources in the world, it's easy to be wasteful. You know, so Stephen's had that, you know, he's maybe been at bigger clubs in Motherwell, but, you know, when, you know, what it did bring to him, he said, was that togetherness and, you know, that real value of being together in something, in a journey together with like-minded people, which is just equally as powerful.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to be at Motherwell at the same time as you, Mick, and seen you make that transition into coaching as well with Craig's, Stephen Craig. Yeah. And it's, again, the opportunity came up. It was the right time, wasn't it, for you to take
it? Stephen Robinson was crucial to it. You know, and when Robbo came as assistant, for whatever reason, he seemed to took a shine to myself, and I certainly took a shine to him. And he's probably the one that had the biggest, when I look back in your coaching career and how it started to evolve, Stephen's probably had the biggest impact on my coaching career. The way he was organised, the way he planned sessions, the way everything was structured to how you're then going to play and perform on the Saturday against, if you were playing against a team who had better players than what we had. At the time, there was always a plan, there was always a structure. He didn't suffer fools gladly, as you know. But as a coach, he was absolutely terrific. Again, one of the kind of best coaches that I had worked under at that period of time. He then took over as manager, and the first thing he did was he had sat down and he had spoke to me and said, I still had a year left of playing. And he had said to me, look, I want you and Keith Lasley to come and join my staff. And yeah, I says, look, it's a big decision because I still had a year left playing. But as soon as somebody makes you feel valued, yeah. I think, and I'm realising this now as a coach, being part of a coaching staff and a coaching team, you must feel valued. And he made me feel valued. And straight away I come home and I'd say to my wife, look, I'm going to retire. It was something that was completely out of the blue to every single one of my family. But it was the right time, and it's the right time. And if I hadn't have done what I did at Motherwell, even at Middlesbrough, taking the under-16s, Motherwell taking the 17s, the 18s, assistant Craig's, being with the first team on a daily basis as well, there's no way that I would have been able to get the opportunity that I had to come back to Celtic. And it was because I had planned, I had prepared for that moment, which when you look back, you've been on a journey from a long period of time to try and become the best coach that you can possibly be. And Stephen Robinson had I'll always be thankful for the opportunity that he gave me.
Yeah, it's such a nice sort of career path that we're talking about here, because then the opportunity does come up to return to a club that means so much to you. I know that, Mick. Yeah. And I mean, at the minute, despite obviously football not being on, you must be really, you know, relishing the opportunity and obviously the job that you've got yourself at Celtic now.
It's been terrific. Chris McCart's been he's been such a positive influence to at Celtic for a long period of time, and he goes under the radar quite a lot. And it's funny that the staff that Chris has brought in throughout the academy and even at first team level, that's the one thing, and it's about developing the person and then the player. And even in the staff, it's good people, it's exceptional people that are at the football club. There's a real togetherness. It's, when I say it's similar to Motherwell, and the fact that Motherwell's a very small staff, but there's a real togetherness. At Celtic, there's a big, big staff throughout because of the size of the football club. But there's a real sense of togetherness, and that people will help you at any corner, at any part of adversity that you face. There's always somebody there to kind of help you out, which is terrific. But you've also got a freedom to go and coach and a freedom to go and kind of learn. And our job as coaches, we do our best to try and produce players that can play in Champions League nights for Celtic, and we try and do that the best way we possibly can. And the best way for us to do it is we try and develop the person and then the player.
That's a really good message, isn't it, Greg? The person, because I think times like this is probably when you realise more than ever that, you know, footballers are just people at the end of the day. I know we all know that, but sometimes people do forget that you're dealing with personalities, emotions, a lot more than just what happens out in the football pitch.
You're so right, Lewis, and I'm so fortunate in life that through kind of my career in coach education, you do get to realise that. You know, you get to realise that when you spend time with the likes of Stephen on a, you know, he's a husband, he's a father, you know, he's got a family, you know, he's got everything you've got. You know, I think a lot of people, you know, put players up in these pedestals because, you know, because of the limelight they get and because of, you know, the attention they get in the media, etc. But you're right, there's absolutely a person there, and it's about getting to know, it's about getting to, you know, Stephen touched on earlier, we're talking about, you know, as a coach now, he must make people feel valued. Well, you need to get to know the person to see what, because I might value something completely different to how you value it, to completely different how Stephen will value it. So our values might all be different. So Stephen's got to work out as a coach how to make you feel valued, but at the same time, how I feel valued, and that might be very different. Very different. So you're right, at the heart of that is always those relationships and getting to know people.
I want to take you back, Stephen, to the first day when you returned to Celtic in this coaching capacity. Obviously, I'm sure that must have brought a lot of, you know, various emotions, but you know, when you think about the young player that started there, yourself, are you then going back in with all this knowledge, everything you spoke about, all these experiences, and that first moment when you go in there and you are coaching again with these young boys at the club, is any of that going through your head? Is it all buzzing about your head?
It was quite a surreal moment, Lewis, if I'm being honest. But again, what I tried to do as soon as my playing career finished as such, you're almost putting that in a box and saying, right, this is what's happened. And that's the way I've kind of tried to address and embrace my coaching journey, is that the playing side of it is now done. And you can rely on your experiences when it comes to the game and how certain managers maybe made you feel. But as a coach, you're learning, you're starting out in your journey, and I think it's, as Greg touched on earlier, it's two completely different professions. That's the way I see it. And I was going to, there's no way that when the opportunity came to go back to Celtic, you had to go through an interview process, you had to go through it, and it was really, really tough, but it was a brilliant experience. And it wasn't a case of that you ended up coming back because of who you were or your what you were previously at the club. It's the same as every other coach that applied for the kind of job. And that's, for me, that was the best way to be treated, because all the years that you had kind of planned and prepared for that moment, it was almost, you're ready for it. And I think what I tried to do as a player, come towards the end of your career, you're preparing for that moment, you're writing things down, you're thinking about sessions, what would you do differently? Even in team talks, you're watching how the manager will deliver certain things, how does he react in certain situations, how the players then react, because you're trying to then almost build a log of putting yourself in the shoes as a manager or as a coach so that you're ready for that experiences. When I come back, I think I had been back for a day, and Brendan Rodgers was the manager at the time, and Chris had said, look, the manager wants to come up and speak to him, because I was based at Barrowfield taking the under-18s. And when I started coaching, I was always about sizes. Everything was about sizes. I had to make sure my box was going to be 8x8 instead of 10x10. But if it was 9x9, I couldn't cope. I was a yard out. And the more you see and the more you look, it's your relationship with people. And it's the respect that you show. If you want to, the only way that you're going to show respect, gain respect and gain players' trust, is to show it in the first place. So that's probably one of the biggest, certainly the learning experiences that I've felt since I've stopped playing, getting into the coaching side, is how you manage people and how people, how you treat them. And I think that's an aspect that I can certainly improve on, and that's one of the reasons why I'm not in a rush at this stage to go and manage. I feel as if I'm developing very well, but I love where I'm working, and the staff that I'm working with are terrific. And I feel as if, as long as you have got that mindset where you can continue to learn, you can continue to grow, I think you'll be in a good place.
One thing that Stephen certainly put in was work to get to where he is now, Greg. And you know, I remember, obviously, you were doing your pro license while you were playing. You know, you were putting in hours and endless amounts of work to get to where you are. And then, obviously, Greg, he gets to this point in his career now, back at Celtic, and you hear him talking about, you know, there isn't a rush for someone to just jump into a manager's job. He's got a clear mindset of what he wants to achieve, and it's great when you hear him, you know, paint that picture for us.
It is, of course it is, and you know, and doing all those things, you know, having that mindset to learn and grow, as he says, and sometimes it's a nice, you know, if he's got that opportunity just now under Chris at Celtic to, you know, develop at his own pace and do things and try things, then it'll allow Stephen as well to make the mistakes without any pressure. So that's credit, of course, to Chris. You know, Chris has recognised that's how maybe Stephen likes to be managed, and we're back to developing personal, you know, personal and professional relationships again. So, you know, it's nice to hear, because quite often you hear people, you know, they want to go to the top and they want to go there quickly. And sometimes, you know, just sometimes there's no substitute for that experience. And I always think that, you know, you look at other industries and, you know, I just think football can be a slog at times. Not necessarily a bad slog, but, you know, one that you've got to put in the hours, you've got to put in the hard graft, and, you know, there's no quick way of, I don't think, getting anywhere. And sometimes if you do get there quickly, you can quite often fail. So, you know, as Stephen said, Motherwell and now Celtic, if he's got that opportunity and what sounds like two wonderful environments to help him thrive and grow and develop, then better still.
Yeah. One thing we've not gone into in enough detail, I feel, Mick, is we're not lucky enough to always get international players on here. So, you know, you spoke about the environment you've been in a club, I guess, having been on the international scene, you've seen Gordon Strachan working at club level and international level. I guess there's a big challenge there for coaches, and this is obviously further than mine for, I'm sure, a lot of coaches, but transitioning to international football is not always easy for players or as managers. Did you see that challenges for managers at international level?
Absolutely. I was listening to a webinar the other day, and it was a coach talking about it. It was actually Gregor Townsend talking about it, about how transition from Glasgow Warriors into Scotland and how trying to create a culture at club level, and it's a lot easier because you're working with the players on a daily basis and you know how you're going to work, and I'd imagine that would be the biggest challenge when you then go to international level, is that you've only got a short period of time with the players. So that must be a different challenge in itself, and I'd imagine that the best way then to kind of combat that is to always be in contact with the player. Yeah. So if you're the man, I've no doubt Steve Clark just now will be keeping his squad of players, his staff, they'll be in constant dialogue with the players. And again, it's going back to that point I made earlier about feeling valued. If you feel valued as the individual, is there constant contact, constant communication between the player and the staff? And when you've got that, it shows, and it means that the player feels valued and he knows that if the manager trusts them, and if the manager trusts them, then the manager then realises that he's earned that trust from the player, which I think is crucial.
Yeah, it really does breed the best results, doesn't it? And it sounds probably to some people maybe listening to this quite a simple thing to say, but just having that relationship and building a relationship and doing, you know, regularly keeping in contact is naturally going to breed better results.
I think so, and I think it's harder nowadays with young players as well, because young players spend so much of their life through a mobile phone, and we had this discussion in the pro license about what do you do as a coach? Do you take the phones off the kids, or do they then feel anxious? Do they then feel a bit anxiety because you've removed that? And again, it's trying to read the person, see what they feel, and figuring out what's best. One thing might suit me as a player, it might be something completely different from the next player. So, and I think the only way you really understand these is by spending time with these young players, spending time and get to know the players, get to know their family, what makes them tick, what's the reason for them wanting to become a footballer. And I think a lot of the times the biggest part of that is they're doing it to make their family proud.
Yeah.
You know, so I think when moments can happen, it might be their debut, I think if the family are involved in it, and you make a big thing about it, it's important. Certainly when I look back at, you're talking about international career, I'll never forget singing the national anthem for the first time, and it's amazing when you're standing in that, blasting out the national anthem, the only people that you can see in the stadium are your parents and your wife. Yeah. So it's small things like that, no matter what's going on round about you, it's the people that mean the most to you. That you can see. So I think if you can flip that with the players, to know if that's what makes them tick as such. It's important that they get to share it with these people that mean the most to them.
Yeah, that's, it is quite something to hear that, isn't it, Greg? That experience, that knowledge, and being able to apply that. I mean, we're talking now, like, it might sound funny, but it's a different challenge to what you'll have experienced in the early playing days, mate. You know, people with the phones all the time, yeah. And this different society we live in where they're so dependent on it. But it's putting into practice, putting the heart at it, first and foremost, to try and transition into what is ultimately a different generation now, the way that they function, I guess.
Absolutely. Isn't it? I think that's why, as coaches, we all need to evolve, and we're constantly, Greg touched on it earlier, I think if you stand still, you'll get left behind in the game. So you need to always keep up with the current trends. You need to make sure that you're networking the best way you possibly can, and because you just don't know when the next, you don't know what's going to, the one thing that football is it's unpredictable. You've got no idea what's around the corner, and I think it's important that, I was always told as a kind of young player, you work so hard to build your reputation, you can lose it just like that. So it's important that you try, and I've always tried to maintain that level of professionalism, dedication, application. And I said before, I said the same thing to Stephen Robinson when I was taking over. I said, look, I'll always tackle my coaching career the same way I did my professional playing career, and I don't know anything different. And I think that's important.
Yeah, it certainly is. Greg, it's been a pleasure listening to Stephen talk through his coaching journey, hasn't it? There's so much that we can really take from that, I guess. And I'm sure, as you know, always do, you'll be sitting there taking notes, thinking about it, processing it. There's so much there that we can be thankful to listen to.
You know, even getting to know Stephen on the pro licence, you know, a couple of years back, 2 or 3 years ago back now, and, you know, just listening to him all the time, and you know, there was a pro licence here, and as you said, you know, Stephen was still playing, but you know, there's the days he wasn't rushing away to go back to training or get back to the club. You know, he would probably be the focal point of a little chat in the corner of the room, and he was, you know, constantly, you know, chatting about the game again, learning. But you know, and he's got that humility about him, which is just, you know, fantastic. And I'm always fascinated to hear boys at Motherwell. You know, the way they chat about Stephen Robinson, and you know, even now, you know, Dan O'Day has recently moved back to Celtic. You know, he talks about that so highly, and Dermot O'Carroll currently. So, you know, Stephen's been part of all that, and it's just, as you say, it's just, I've got pages of notes again, and it's just great to listen to. And we could go on. You know, he touched on learning again from Gregor Townsend. Stephen and I have both seen Gregor on the pro licence, and you know, chatting about, you know, Gregor brought love. to the lecture that day. He speaks about, you know, getting the players to love each other, but we're back to the person at the heart of it, and Stephen's certainly got that. You know, he's always very respectful. You know, even if it's, you know, if he sends you a text to ask you something, but he's apologising just for sending a text, you know, just, as I say, just completely and utterly respectful, and just, yeah, it's just, as you likely say, Lewis, just wish him all the very best in what he's got ahead of him.
I guess that's kind of the note I'd like to kind of end on, Mick, with you. Is, yeah, it's hard to predict the future at the minute with the game, but you know, with your coaching career, as you talk about being separate thing to you, you know, it's only just beginning. I guess it's hopefully a very big future for you, but I guess when you look ahead, what are your hopes and ambitions as a coach?
I think, again, it's my ambitions is just to try and make a difference to the players that I'm working with on a daily basis. I would love them to go on and have the best career that they possibly can be, and hopefully that your hard work that you try and put in on a daily basis is for other people. It's not even a job. You're doing something every day that you love. I'm very passionate about the coaching. Management is something that I would like to have a crack at some point, but I'm certainly not in a rush. I'm loving the work that I'm doing. I'm loving the work. I'm working for the club that I love. I'm working with terrific people, and I'm just hopefully keep developing and keep learning. And I think if you've got a passion for learning, no matter what it will be, what it is, then hopefully you can be successful.
Yeah. Well, from myself, and I know I speak for Greg when I say it, he just alluded to it, we wish you all the very best for the future, mate. It's been a true pleasure having you on the podcast, so thanks very much for your time.
No, thanks for having me.
That's all we have time for in this week's edition of the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast. Feel free to send us your feedback, your ideas for coaching topics you want us to cover, and to get in touch, visit @ScottishFA on Twitter or email info@scottishfa.co.uk.